I remember a friend from university telling me about how hard it was to find a Mother's Day card for her mother. The shopping experience left my friend feeling depleted and depressed. She explained to me, "My mom is an okay person, but she wasn't a particularly great mom. She stayed late at work all the time and didn't take much of an interest in our lives. It was my dad who knew the names of all my friends and was always talking with me about how my day was and what we were doing in school and how I was feeling and what I was thinking. It was my dad that knew me best and loved me unconditionally. My mom loved us, but she was kind of distant. So none of the cards in the store fit. They all said things like, 'Number one mom,' and 'I can always count on you,' and 'Happy Mother's Day to the world's greatest mother,' for nursing me while I was sick, for the stories you read me, for the boo-boos you made better, for all the recitals you attended, for the cookies you baked. Thank you, Mom." None of these messages were right for my friend's mother, and that made my friend feel bad. I imagine it is even worse for those with even more difficult maternal relationships, those with hypercritical mothers or abusive mothers, or mothers whose untreated alcoholism or mental illness impeded their ability to parent. I count myself lucky that I have a mother who does fit the wonderful mom profile. Throughout my childhood, my mother was my rock, and I continue to carry her close to my heart today. However, my experience with my stepmother, or stepmonster, as I like to call her, gave me a sense of how hard it can be to have a parent whose affection or approval is impossible to gain. There is something in us that needs parental affection and love. When that emotional sustenance is absent, a gaping hole is left in its place. It hurts, and it can take a long time to heal. If you have a difficult relationship with your mother, Mother's Day can be, well, difficult. Part of that difficulty stems from the extreme idealization of motherhood in our culture. The ideal is perhaps most blatantly disseminated by Hallmark, but it is perpetuated in many other forms of cultural media as well: housekeeping magazines, children's books, TV, advertising everywhere. Mothers are supposed to be a certain way: warm, loving, dependable, infinitely patient and understanding, a font of wisdom regarding everything from romance to stain removal techniques. And our relationships with our mothers are supposed to be close, comforting, enjoyable, a perfect connection of mutual understanding and unconditional love. If you don't have a relationship with your mother that lives up to that ideal, you can feel deficient, deprived, or both. Even if you have a great relationship with your mother most of the time, there can be moments when the relationship doesn't or didn't live up to that ideal. You can think that you are close and then abruptly feel taken aback when you realize that there are ways in which she doesn't fully understand you, or ways in which you don't really understand her. Sometimes she'll do something that makes you mad. There's also the irritation that comes with knowing someone so well, those habits that grate on you over time. Maybe she slurps her soup or overreacts when something spills. Maybe she always looks at the negative side of things or can't resist giving advice. Sometimes she does things that irritate you, and other times you do things that irritate her. Disconnect, anger, irritation. When we are given only that ideal of the mother-child bond, these moments can feel like a failure of relationship, like there's something wrong with us. Instead of what those moments really are, the natural result of two human beings in human relationship, a real mother-child relationship. The idealization of motherhood can be hard on people who have mothers. The idealization of motherhood can also be hard on people who are mothers. To begin with, there is the idealization of what it is like to have a baby. I have a friend who was so miserable her first year of being a mom that she wrote a many-page essay detailing all the horrors of birth and infant care. The pain and difficulty of childbirth and then nursing, the way your body is no longer your own, all the parts of you that hurt, the feeling of being trapped, serving the needs of this 8-pound bundle, unable to feed yourself or take a shower, the overwhelming sense of helplessness when you can't stop the baby's crying, the total and complete exhaustion, both mind-numbing and body-draining, the astonishment and despair at the end of the day when all you have managed to do is nurse, change diapers, and keep the baby alive. Nothing has been cleaned, no meals prepared, the mountain of laundry remains untouched. No one told me, my friend wailed. Someone should have warned me. So she composed the aforementioned essay to warn others. When I asked her about the essay years later, as I was getting ready to have my first child, she laughed and replied, "Oh, that? I never really circulated that." In retrospect, I think we just had a particularly hard baby. He was so colicky. In the end, we got through it just fine. Perhaps you've heard of the phrase, mommy amnesia, and the ensuing assertion that if we remembered how hard it is to have a baby, no one would have more than one. Even after the amnesia has blurred that first year into warm, fuzzy memories, there is the rest of motherhood to consider. It seems like each era has an ideal that is impossible to live up to. The 50s housewife, perfect and cheerful house cleaner, grocery shopper, cook, baker, caregiver, wife, and mother. The supermom of the 80s and 90s, excelling at a high-powered career and still managing to bring up the kids. Apparently, the current ideal places more pressure on the kid part of that equation. Now the perfect mother may still work outside the home, but she must be, at the same time, always there for her kids, attuned to their evolving needs, nurturing the development of their minds, bodies, and spirits with a carefully researched set of resources especially suited to each child's particular passions and potential. An article in the last fall in The Guardian stated that the ideal of the superwoman juggling motherhood and work has been scotched. Now the pressure on women is to be perfect carers with careers like a dirty secret. The author explains, if the mother is recast as the only perfect carer, and all children deserve perfection, then having a job becomes a grim necessity or a dirty secret. Gabby Hinsliff, who is writing a book about this conundrum, says, what seems to be pitched is a kind of stealth career where you are doing something really interesting that you love, but it's not interfering with your life. So instead of superwoman, we have the mumpreneur, running an organic food empire from her kitchen table and then baking all afternoon. And that's not very realistic either. Figuring out the work balance is hard enough. But even if you set that aside, even if you choose to be a stay-at-home mom, the parenting piece is really hard. And here I'm guessing that some of the dads might recognize this struggle as well. For though our culture still holds moms to a higher standard in this arena, dads have increasingly stepped up to the plate and are participating more in figuring out this puzzle of parenting. Let's look at that parenting puzzle. Consider the perspective of a new mom or dad. You get this sense that there is an ideal way to parent, and there are plenty of books out there that will tell you what that ideal method is. But first of all, the methods are often hard to implement in reality. And secondly, the experts often disagree with each other. How do you get a baby to sleep through the night? Do you let them cry it out? Do you take them into a family bed? There are people who swear by sleep training, and other people who say that when they tried sleep training, their baby cried so hard it threw up. How do you get your kid to eat healthy food? Do you supply them with a range of healthy options and have faith that they will eat what they need? I swear our kid will only eat pasta and cereal if we let her. But as soon as you introduce a mandatory balance, you enter the world of bargaining. You can have more pasta if you first eat a protein. And experts tell us that setting up some foods as rewards make those foods more desirable and messes up a kid's ability to stop eating when they are full. They force themselves to eat one food to get the reward of binging on the other. On the behavioral front, how do you find the balance between being too permissive and too rigid? When should you give a kid choices? And when can you say, this is a non-negotiable? How do you provide resources and encouragement for learning without inadvertently pressuring your child to excel? How do you get a kid to be responsible without nagging them all the time? There are so many different and often opposing opinions about how to do things right, which in the end means you can always find someone to tell you that you are doing it wrong. The one thing that I have learned from being a parent is that it is not helpful to judge another parent. You might think a parent is doing the wrong thing, making some mistake in their parenting choices. It's just not helpful to tell them that. Setting aside cases of child abuse, for that requires something else entirely. When we consider the well-meaning, basically good but fallible parents in our families, in our communities, it is much more helpful to support a parent than to judge them. Here are some things we can remind ourselves as we strive to support the parents in our midst. First of all, there is no single ideal way to parent. No one way works perfectly well on every kid, and many different methods, even opposing methods, can work out just fine. A kid who slept in a family bed and a kid who cried it out can both grow up to be happy, healthy human beings. Really, I know one of each. One of the reasons for this variance is that each kid is unique. Each child follows a slightly different developmental path, has a different temperament, is motivated by different things. Sometimes accepting a kid as they are, even if they are different from the norm, can help. Just because a kid is very active doesn't mean she has ADD. Just because a kid is sensitive or shy doesn't mean he needs occupational therapy. Just because a kid doesn't want to put her face underwater doesn't mean she'll never learn how to swim. Many of these things work themselves out with time. As my own parental anxiety has morphed into humility, I have learned that patience and acceptance are powerful allies. Another reason different methods work for different families is that parents are also unique. Author Megan Francis cautions parents that they need not waste time and mental angst striving to be the ideal parent. She advises parents to be the parent you are, to bring the person you are to your parenting. Her book is called The Happiest Mom, 10 Secrets to Enjoying Motherhood. In this blog entry, she highlights a chapter entitled Keep It Real. She writes, "When I was pregnant with my oldest son, Jacob, I found myself inexplicably attracted to flowery, flowing Laura Ashley-styled maternity dresses. To me, they screamed, 'Blissful mother frolicking with her child in a field of daisies.' They seemed to epitomize all that the ideal mother should be, and down deep somewhere, I think I thought putting on one would help transform me into that ideal mother." She continues, "It did not take long for me to realize that I am no kind of ideal mother, at least not in the sense that I fantasized about all those years ago. What I am is, well, me. And the more me I can bring to motherhood, the closer I get to my own version of the ideal, which, as it turns out, has never once included putting on a flowing dress and skipping through a daisy field." She continues, "We all have our mom's strengths and superpowers. Maybe you're the mom who always has the ingredients of chocolate chip cookies on hand and is willing to use them. Maybe you're the mom who always has time to listen to a child's knock-knock joke." In chapter 4 of The Happiest Mom, she says, "I advise readers to keep it real. You are not going to magically change into a board game lover or an arts and crafts director just because you had children. Keeping it real means bringing the person you really are to the experience of motherhood, rather than trying to be somebody you are not to fit into your own personal ideal mom fantasy." Different methods work for different kids. Different methods work for different parents. It is just not true that there is one path and all else will lead to ruin. Many roads are good enough. The project is not to produce perfect progeny. We don't have that much power. The project is to support our kids as they make their way through the ups and downs of life. It is some combination of all of these truths that I think make that Anna Quindelen piece so compelling to so many parents. It's the one that gets forwarded around on email every Mother's Day. I will read you an extensive excerpt. She writes, "All my babies are gone now. I say this not in sorrow, but in disbelief. I take great satisfaction in what I have today, 3 almost adults, 2 taller than me, 1 closing in fast. Everything in all the books I once pored over is finished for me now. Penelope Leach, T. Barry Brosleton, Dr. Spock. The ones on sibling rivalry and sleeping through the night and early childhood education, all grown obsolete. What those books taught me finally, and what the women on the playground taught me, and the well-meaning relations and the older parents at cocktail parties, what they taught me was that they couldn't really teach me very much at all. Raising children is presented first as a true-false test, then becomes multiple choice, until finally, far along, you realize that it is an endless essay. No one knows anything. One child responds well to positive reinforcement. Another can only be managed with a stern voice and a timeout. One boy is toilet trained at 3, his brother at 2. When my first child was born, parents were told to put the baby to bed on his belly so that he would not choke on his own spit up. By the time my last arrived, babies were put down on their backs because of research on sudden infant death syndrome. As a new parent, this ever-shifting certainty is terrifying and then soothing. Eventually, you must learn to trust yourself. Eventually, the research will follow." Oh, there's more, but I will proceed. She continues, "Even today, I'm not sure what worked and what didn't, what was me and what was simply life. When they were very small, I suppose I thought someday they would become who they were because of what I'd done. Now I suspect they simply grew into their true selves, and in a thousand ways, off and let them be. The book said to be relaxed, and I was often tense, matter of fact, and I was sometimes over the top. And look at all how it all turned out, she says. I wound up with three people I like best in the world, who have done more than anyone to excavate my essential humanity. That's what the books never told me. I was bound and determined to learn from the experts. It just took me a while to figure out who the experts were. The idealization of motherhood can hurt us when we consider our own mothers. The idealization can hurt mothers and doesn't do any favors for fathers either. The idealization of motherhood can also have a negative impact on women who are not mothers, women who want kids but can't have them, as well as women who deliberately choose to not have children. Our society is riddled with erroneous, subliminal, and overt messages that suggest that a woman who doesn't want a child is unnatural, even suspect, and that a woman who doesn't have a child is somehow incomplete. It behooves us all to fight these misconceptions. A woman is a person, a whole, inherently valuable human being all by herself, just by being herself. A woman can be a complete person without ever bearing a child. Consider, for example, Florence Nightingale, Ella Fitzgerald, Jane Austen, Queen Elizabeth I, Mary Cassatt, Lily Tomlin, Diane Sawyer, Oprah Winfrey. Furthermore, a woman who chooses to not bear a child does not necessarily dislike children. In fact, she may spend a good portion of her energy caring for other people's children. Witness, for example, Mother Teresa. I actually have a fairly easy time accepting these counter-cultural truths, in part because of my own inner dialogue pre-parenthood. I have always wanted kids, but before I had a child of my own, I had to grapple with the fact that I felt that it was selfish to do so. It is one thing to adopt a kid that already exists, but to make a new one? This world is overpopulated enough. The planet does not need one more human being on it. The world would benefit more if I put my time, energy, and funds directly into caring for the Earth instead of growing another human being to use up its resources. Eventually, because my drive to be a mom was so strong, I just accepted that I was making a selfish choice. Maybe it's because it's so normalized, I have been able to let go of any residual guilt about it. I just try to raise my kid to be good for the Earth, too. But going through that whole line of thinking helped me to see and to authentically feel that the choice to not have children is perfectly valid, even noble. There is a website called Gateway Women, the tagline of which is, "We may not be mothers, but we care, we count, and we rock." I'll read a bit more. Quote, "One of the aims of Gateway Women is to celebrate the contribution that women without children make to our culture. Not having children, whether by choice or circumstance, creates the possibility of a different kind of life. Too often, women are child-free by circumstance, women who are child-free by circumstance are left with a sense of not having a proper life, with a sense that they somehow have to make do with the leftovers. And many women who are child-free by choice find themselves vilified as heartless, selfish types, lacking some vital quality that would make them real women. But tell me this," she says, "what other kind of women are there apart from real women? Not everyone has to be a mother in order to contribute to society. That doesn't make motherhood wrong in any way, or any less selfless or glorious, but neither does it make being child-free freaky. So let's start celebrating our child-free role models. They can be child-free by choice or child-free by circumstance. What matters is who they are, not who they are not. Motherhood is, at its finest, an act of devotion. But as the poet Rumi wrote, "Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground." Child-free by choice or by circumstance, either way, not having kids frees up a lot of energy to contribute to the world. The Gateway website helps women who are not already doing so to focus on their values and harness their passions in a way that makes their lives rich, fertile, meaningful, even in this culture that is so slow to recognize that possibility and potential. The idealization of motherhood is not good for women who are not mothers. It is not good for women who are mothers. And it is not good for those of us who have mothers. That seems to cover nearly everyone, doesn't it? Except maybe boys who are raised solely by dads. But I doubt the idealization of motherhood is so great for them either. It probably undercuts the value of the care provided by fathers. I think we can safely say then that the idealization of motherhood is problematic for everyone. So what do we, as compassionate, valued-centered Unitarian Universalists, do about this? How do we bring our mission to bear here, transforming selves and world through compassionate action? How do we cope with this harmful ideal? I suggest we embrace instead the real. Let us hold in compassion a real image of motherhood. Consider your own mother, whether she is deceased or still living, insofar as it feels emotionally comfortable. Do what you can to regard your mother as a whole human person with both gifts and frailties. Do what you can to hold your relationship the way it is. Acknowledge the imperfections. Appreciate what you appreciate. Maybe she was critical, but she also defended you like a mama bear when you came under attack. Maybe she was over-involved, but she supported you steadfastly in both your achievements and failures. Maybe she didn't love you the way you wanted her to, but she loved you the way she could. Maybe you can find nothing to appreciate. The reality of that sadness deserves to be held as well, alongside the love and gratitude that moves among us this Mother's Day. If you are a mother, set aside that ideal. Embrace the real. Be the mother you are. Love the kids you have. Practice patience and acceptance for your kids, for yourself. There is no perfect way. There are many ways that are good enough. Turn away from the ideal. Embrace what is real. Give it your full heart, your authentic self. All of us, men and women, moms and non-moms, can help. Let us support the mothers in our midst. Let us not dangle in front of them our own ideals and judgments. Let us neither scoff at the woman who nurses her three-year-old. Yes, I saw the Time magazine cover. Nor look down at the woman who bottle feeds. Let us hold our tongues when we think one mom is being too indulgent or another mom too strict. Let us have faith that all of these women love their kids and are doing their best to raise them well. If we really care, if we really want to help, let us support the mothers. Ask how they are doing. Offer to help. It takes a village is not about a village standing around in a circle doling out advice and judgments to a parent. It is about a village being in relationship with the parent and the child, supporting both with love and care. And the last way we can counteract the harm caused by the idealized vision of motherhood is to support and respect women who do not have children, either by choice or by circumstance. Let us lift up to the rest of the world a vision of women as complete and real in and of themselves, no child needed. Let us respect and appreciate the ways in which women enrich life for all of us through whatever gifts they bring. This Mother's Day, let us set aside the ideal and hold in reverence what is real. Let us hold in compassion that which is hard. Let us hold in gratitude that which is good. And let us hold in love one another. So may it be. Amen.